Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, fastest growing, and largest segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they've become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our number, if you'd like to join in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. Yesterday, I received a really interesting email from a fellow I've been corresponding with over the revelations discussed at yadayah.com and also at introtogod.org, as well as questioningpaul.com. And he looked at the conjugations and the stems associated with the verbs in Kara 23:29. Now, if I just say 23:29, it doesn't mean anything to anybody. But if I share it with you and in context, his question was really a good one. It is the presentation of what happens if you don't respond to Yahweh's invitation to meet with him on Yom Kippurim, which was a few days ago as we're now approaching Sukkah. We're in between, that 5 days in between Yom Kippurim and Sukkah. And his question was, since the verb karat, to be cut off, was in the perfect, he was concerned that, wow, if I miss, what the perfect means is just one time, an event that whether it's in the past, present, or future, indetermined, but is a completed event, not an ongoing event. The imperfect means that that this is something that is ongoing, continual, continuous, or habitual, that sort of thing. For example, all of the seven instructions Yahweh wrote in the imperfect. So you're not considered in violation of you shall not kill unless you make a habit of killing. And if you're in the military, you might have a real problem. It doesn't say that one act of adultery would cause a person to be in violation of the Torah, but a continual, ongoing attitude or behavior that was adulterous would put you in conflict. We've all borne false witness. That doesn't mean we're all guilty. The moment you stop doing so, you're no longer in violation of the instruction because it speaks of habitual, ongoing behavior. If you've shoplifted once, but you stop shoplifting, you don't steal from anybody anymore, then you're not in violation of the instruction, you shall not steal, because it was written in the imperfect. So seeing this in the imperfect, the verb karat, cut off, he was concerned and said, does that mean that this, unlike the instructions, one miss and I'm through? Well, I did a fresh translation, which is always the right way to start, and I'll share that with you here, and then we'll go on to the news. The translation reads as follows. It begins with ki, which means surely or indeed. Then kol ha nefesh, which would be any soul. Every soul, any soul. Soul was the singular. Soul is your consciousness. Who beneficially, and you could probably say which, because sometimes we think of a soul as an it as opposed to a person, but since a soul is associated with a person, I'm going to use who beneficially. It's asher. It could also be who relationally. Is not moved to continuously respond. So the verb that applies to us was not written in the perfect, but instead the imperfect. So it's consistent with all of Yahweh's instructions on encouraging us to respond to his guidance. It talks about ongoing behavior. Now, this was written in the pool. It's not a particularly common stem. Now, in Hebrew, all verbs have a stem that establishes a relationship between the subject, object, and the action of the verb. In the case of the pool, the subject, which is the soul, is being acted upon continually because of the imperfect, and is passively influencing an ongoing condition associated with the object, which is the essential day. So, for example, if you were to say, Yada flew the plane, that would indicate the non-passive version of this stem. But the passive version of this stem, the pool, would be the plane was flown with Bob. So that the flying was acting upon the individual. So what we have here is another affirmation that there are motivations, there's inclinations, there's insights, this is a response. And so what God is saying is that based upon what I've shared with you, you should be moved, you should be encouraged, you should be inclined to follow the direction that I've provided. And I want you to do so on an ongoing basis. So, you know, if you haven't in the past, start. So indeed, any soul who beneficially is not moved to continuously respond, is not motivated to reply and answer on an ongoing basis, indeed, this is now the essential day, on an ongoing basis, it will be totally and actually cut off. Now, that was written in the perfect, in the Niffle perfect, which is passively, actually, at once and for all. So what this means, and it's cut off from the family, what that means is that our behavior does not have to be perfect. We just ought to make a practice once we know that there's an invitation of answering it. And yet God's response to us has to be perfect. So God is making a situation where what he does is always consistent, always perfect, and what we are asked to do, he recognizes we're imperfect. The difference between the way that the conjugations were applied to the verb based upon who is doing the acting. Thought it was a good question. One of the things that has been troubling to me is that as a nation, and the news yesterday was that another American, this one I believe in Chicago, a Mohammed somebody, was arrested and now will be tried and probably imprisoned for trying to flee the United States and join the Islamic State. He had a ticket to Turkey and left a note that says that he wanted to leave the immorality of the West and join the virtuous Islamic State. Now, there are two things that I want to convey here. The first is, imagine how stupid you have to be. I mean, religion makes people stupid. I understand that. And Islam is the dumbest of all religions. But to think that a religion and a group that is engaged in beheading, rape, annihilation of entire communities, human rights abuses, mass murder, terrorism, is virtuous. No, I don't want to have to pretend that the West is not immoral. But to contrast it with the Islamic State and say that, and to be so beguiled, so idiotic, so stupid, that you think the Islamic State is a bastion of virtue. Yeah, I don't care what happens to you. You are an absolute waste of breath. Now, the big issue here, though, is something we've shared on this program for a long time. The most deadly disease on this planet today is Islam. And the only thing that would keep everyone from coming to that conclusion is that far too few people think. They don't take the time to investigate the evidence. They haven't studied the Islamic scriptures. They haven't studied Islamic history. They haven't studied current Islamic behavior. And they're not rational. They're not even if they were to study some of these things, they're not making the proper connections and therefore conclusions. But it is indisputable, irrefutable, overwhelmingly so, indisputably so, that Islam is the most deadly disease on the planet today. And here you have someone infected with this deadly disease, Islam, who wants to leave the country and wants to go where Islam is ubiquitous, where there is no one else he can infect, where everyone that is going to be around him is already infected with the same disease. And we stop it, make it a crime. And yet, when a man from Sierra Leone contracts Ebola and knows that he has Ebola and lies on his entry questionnaire and comes in to the United States and exposes his own family, American taxpayers take him in and provide millions of dollars worth of health care, motivating Africans who are similarly infected to pull off the same stunt. And so we take Ebola, a deadly disease, and we bring it into the country. And we embrace it and provide the best possible care at the country's expense. And yet when an even more deadly disease wants to leave the country, we stop him, and at taxpayer expense, we'll spend millions on a trial and incarceration. We're upside down. We're doing exactly the wrong thing. Now, I know that the idiots from the FBI and the CIA and the White House have all told the lemmings in America that we can't let Americans join ISIS because, oh my God, when they come back, they'll be indoctrinated and they'll become terrorists. And they'll perpetrate terrorism in America. Oh boy. And there aren't five Americans who can think their way through that lie. You know, the fact is, if they leave, they're not here. If they leave and you know that they are going to join the Islamic State, renounce their citizenship. Pull their passport. Don't allow them back into the country. That way they're over there. You don't care what they do. They're gone. Good riddance. It's the best possible solution, and yet we're doing the opposite thing. The first known case of Ebola transmission outside of Africa has occurred in Spain. Now, we may have multiple transmissions of Ebola now in the United States based upon the fellow that flew into Dallas. But in Spain, a Spanish priest who was trying to deal with Ebola chose of his own free will to go to West Africa, was infected with Ebola, and right after the two Americans were flown in by Samaritan's Purse in coordination with the CDC and with the State Department, this priest was flown into Spain. He was given the same ZMAP drugs. Now, there was a big celebration of the two Americans. They survive in the best possible circumstances with the ZMAP drugs. Don't know if ZMAP was responsible, contributed or not. But the Spanish priest, given the best care that Spain could provide and the ZMAP treatment, died. But he didn't die alone. One of the nurses that was responsible for his care, even wrapped up in all of the protective garb, you know, with the gloves, with the goggles, with the respiratory devices, and with a complete Ebola suit that is now provided, the suit for infectious disease and contamination. She contracted Ebola. So here in a Western country, in Spain, in a hospital established with an established infectious disease ward with all of the proper precautions. Nonetheless, the nurse treating the sick priest, who had been flown back from West Africa for treatment, is now fighting for her life. She was just part of the medical team dealing with the priest who died back in September 25th of Ebola. The infected healthcare worker's only symptoms so far have been high fever, and her condition remains somewhat stable. But there's no question that she contracted the disease and now has about a 30% chance to live. Now, this article says the same thing that we've heard so many times, that Ebola spread only through direct contact with bodily fluids of an infected person exhibiting the symptoms. And yet, this person was always protected, sealed in rubber, if you will. And all the time that you hear all of these speaking heads talking about only conveyed through direct contact with bodily fluids and only during a specific period of time, the fact is that every healthcare professional who is acting as a professional either has or should have read the study that I shared with you, that it has been shown that in monkeys, which are one of the two most common non-human conveyors of this disease, that Ebola absolutely can spread as an airborne pathogen. But here's a case of bringing the disease into the country and putting others at risk. If that priest felt the need to go and care for Ebola patients, if he wasn't thoughtful enough to recognize that quarantine is the only sensible approach, that's his stupidity. He ought to be allowed to die with the rest of them. Don't compound stupidity with foolishness. And yet that is what we are doing. Well, Glenn, it doesn't appear that we're anywhere near the end of the tragic tales associated with Ebola and our stupidity towards it.
Yes. The joys of being part of a demographic group that gets dropped like flies when stuff like this happens, you know?
Yes, yeah.
I'm waiting to see if this thing spreads. Are they going to find a way of conscripting doctors and nurses to fight the battle for them?
Yeah, really. Yeah, and Liberia, of course, a huge percentage of the doctors and nurses have, healthcare workers have already died. And it's almost impossible to find those willing to do the job, which is why I'm so concerned that America is sending 4,000 service members over there who could be ordered into that position, and that sounds like a travesty to me. We have a clip that I think we have now broken into four segments that we're going to play for you. We're going to play for you because the Obaminator, the man that the majority of Americans elected not once but twice to be their president, showing just how ridiculously stupid the majority of Americans are, claimed that the Islamic State was not Islamic and that the Islamic State perverted one of the world's great religions. Since both statements are egregious lies, I was listening to a CNN report. The person conducting the report is in, I believe, Turkey, near the Kurdish refugees, and she is interviewing a Kurdish boy. Since radio is a all-audio medium and you're not going to see the pictures, the boy is probably 12 years old.
Between 10 and 13 is the gist that I got from him, or okay, the feel that I got from him.
Okay. So let's use 12. that he's 11 or 12 years old. How about that?
Yeah, definitely.
And that he does not speak English, so he's having things translated for him. But you'll hear what he has to say now translated into English about his opinion of the Islamic State. Now, mind you, he's a Kurdish Muslim boy. He was kidnapped by the Islamic State. He was tortured by the Islamic State. He was indoctrinated by the Islamic State. This is, and now he was freed by the Islamic State. He's back with his Kurdish family, who are at war with the Islamic State. So here's the first segment of that clip.
Marwan says when ISIS first grabbed them, he was terrified. They took us to the mosque and they had us pray. They taught us to pray and we went to the school, a primary school that would be their prison.
All right, here's the first segment. What is the first thing the Islamic State did with the young boys they had captured?
They taught them to pray.
They taught them to pray. Is prayer a religious activity?
Probably the most religious activity you can possibly have.
Okay. And in Islam, is there a certain kind of prayer in Islam that is mandated and is kind of a signature act of that religion?
Yeah, it's moon the sky.
Moon the sky, man. Prostration prayer. Butt up to the sky. The Islamic State, the first thing they did with the boys that they had kidnapped, captured, is that they engaged in a Islamic religious activity under which their goal was to teach the boys the proper way to pray in an Islamic fashion. So could you, if you were to list the things they could do to demonstrate their allegiance to Islam, is there anything you could list that would be more demonstrative that the President of the United States was lying through his teeth and that the Islamic State is indeed Islamic?
Not that I can think of. The praying.
Other than being a suicide bomber, which is the most Islamic of all acts.
Strap a bomb to yourself.
Yeah, that would be even more Islamic, more religious. But from a purely religious point of view, no controversy whatsoever. Making your first act, going to the mosque, and teaching the boy to pray. He even said, Islami. He didn't say, mosque. He said, Islami. They took him to an Islamic center to teach them how to pray. All right, the next thing they took him to was the school. Now, the woman doing the interview wants it to be the school to be a prison. And bad things happen, there's no question about it. But they took them to a school. Now, what do young boys do at school?
You learn.
Right.
You learn things.
Right. What do you think they taught them?
I'm guessing how to be a good Muslim.
There you go. In fact, this young man will confirm that at the school they were taught how to be a good Muslim and why he was also taught why the Islamic State was a virtuous and appropriate, accurate manifestation of the Islamic religion. So that's the second thing they did. They took them to the school because they wanted to teach them Islam.
That's the other thing. In this video, I mean, since we can't relay an image over radio, he is sitting there with his mom and his sister who have just got him back from this place after being there for months.
Right.
And so this is something that didn't take a lot of time to instill into him. This is something
that
took a very relatively short amount of time to get him to say, "All right, I don't want to get beat. I don't want to get hurt. I better do this."
and
he buys into it completely.
Completely. So why don't we play the next segment here?
Marwan says they questioned if he had ties to Kurdish fighters. I said, we don't have anyone. They hit me with cables 5-6 times. Others were more severely beaten, some electrocuted, even hung from the ceiling, he says. And as in this ISIS video showing their child recruits, the kidnapped schoolboys were also entrenched in ISIS's version of Islam.
Well, the
ISIS
first
version,
of all,
right?
First of all, that's the obvious statement. ISIS's version. ISIS doesn't have a version of Islam. I mean, they just do not have a version of Islam. When you have a correspondent for CNN file a report that says this, lying to the world, you understand where the problem is. That's our problem, folks. The media is disingenuous. They're hypocritical. They're dishonest. They're absolutely irrational. They don't have a different way to pray than do any other Muslims. They don't have a different God than does any other Muslims. They don't have a different Quran than do any other Muslims. They don't have a different resource to explain the behavior of Muhammad, who was a terrorist, a pedophile, a rapist, a slave trader, a kidnapper, and a mass murderer, than do any other Muslims.
I've listened to you and IQ talk about Muhammad, Islam, and everything like that for a little over two years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it sure sounds to me a lot like ISIS's version of Islam is a lot like Muhammad's version of Islam.
Yeah, it's identical.
Yeah.
Muhammad was a terrorist. He was a mass murderer. He was a thief. He told anyone who wouldn't convert to Islam that he would take their life. And if the Muslims chose not to take their life, then they would strip that individual of all of their possessions and all of their dignity. That's what the Islamic State is doing. The Quran, because Muhammad thought it to be useful, the Quran tells Muslims to terrorize non-Muslims and peaceful Muslims so that everyone might be warned. The Quran talks about and encourages beheading. It encourages beating infidels. All of the behavior, all of it, that is being exhibited by the Islamic State, right down to the most cruel, is the same kind of behavior that was exhibited by Muhammad. All Muslims have the same prophet, Muhammad. They all look at and read the exact same books regarding his words and deeds. And he was a ruthless terrorist, slave trader, and a kidnapper, a sexual pervert. There is no Islamic source that says otherwise. All of the Islamic sources confirm this over and over again. The Islamic State, like every Muslim, has exactly the same God, same prophet, same Quran, same hadith, same religion. There's only one interpretation of Islam that matters, and that's Muhammad's. It's the basis of Sharia law. It treats women like rubbish. It treats non-Muslims as property to be controlled, to be killed, to be manipulated, to be humiliated. And it gives Muslims no reason to live, only a reason to die. It is the most diabolical disease ever perpetrated on humanity. There is only one interpretation of Islam. And that's the Islam found in the Hadith and the Quran. Period. Well, we played a nice clip, Scott.
We were afraid of them. When are they going to kill us? Today? Tomorrow? And then we found out the truth. That they don't just slaughter someone without evidence, without finding out if they are an infidel or not, Marwan says. The schoolboys were forced to watch videos like this of beheadings and amputations. But not, he says, to instill fear. They wanted us to know the truth, that they don't just grab a random person off the street and execute him without evidence, only if they are infidels.
An infidel in Islam is anyone who is not a jihadi Muslim. That's it. If you're a peaceful Muslim, you're an infidel. according to the Quran, according to Islam. So 100% of those who are Muslims and say they are peaceful are infidels, according to the Quran, according to Sharia law, according to Allah, according to Muhammad.
Or and, they could be practicing what? Is it taqiyya?
The taqiyya, yeah, which is the deliberate lie, where it is appropriate for a Muslim to deceive non-Muslims to make the non-Muslim infidels easier prey. And so in Islam, it lies are sanctioned. It is, taqiyya is the legal lie. In Islam, it is authorized for a Muslim to lie. Muhammad admitted that he was a liar. Allah admits in the Quran that he's a liar. And so the Quran's ninth surah, the second to the last revealed, actually takes lying to an art form. It says you can even set up a set of circumstances where you have a sworn oath, where you have signed your name on a contract, where you are absolutely exonerated. In fact, it's a religious act to renege on your word, to disavow your oath. Lying in Islam is a virtue. We'll be back after the commercial break. So here's this young man. He has had a religious experience. And I want you to tell me, other than Adrian Peterson's house with the switch versus the cables, is there any place other than an Islamic community where a young man would endure all of the following things? First, be kidnapped by a group, not by an individual. So be kidnapped by a group. Second, the first thing they're being asked to do is learn to pray properly. The third thing is to go to school and learn the tenets of the group. Number four is to be beaten with cables. Number five is to be hung from the ceiling and tortured. Number six is to be electrocuted. Number seven is to watch the group perpetrate mass murder. Number eight is to watch the group conduct decapitations, beheadings. Next is to watch the group do amputations where they saw off an arm and a leg on opposite sides.
Not to mention the countless other things that are probably in there, like getting punched and hit and things like that with things that aren't the cables and things like that. Because I'm sure you're getting kicked, you're getting, you know.
Okay. And the entire time, they're in this experience, they're justifying heinous behavior by saying that those who received the torture were infidels. So, infidel, praying, indoctrination, decapitation, amputation, torture. Is there any place in the world where this is a sanctioned event, commonplace, to be done to children other than Islam?
Not
the Boy Scouts do this?
Not the, man, I hope not. They didn't do it when I was a Boy
Scout. No. No, when you go to Catholic catechism, is this what they show you? Is this how they... I know that they do some really repulsive stuff in the Roman Catholic Church. But is it sanctioned? No. Only one religion speaks of infidels. Islam. And Islam, mind you, the people that they were killing, 99.9% of those that they were killing and labeling as infidels were fellow Muslims. So they were Muslims who were either peaceful, Muslims who had a different interpretation of Islam in the sense of Sunni via Shia. But in Shia Islam, who's the prophet?
Muhammad.
What's the scripture?
The Quran.
Who's the God?
Allah.
What's the place of worship?
The mosque.
Right. Yeah. Is there any difference other than a couple of holidays each year and who's in charge between Shia and Sunni Islam?
Not that I know of.
And so they were all labeled infidels. So the choice being positioned by these fundamentalist jihadist Muslims is you either capitulate to our hideous religion and become a fellow jihadist and therefore an individual who will engage in suicide bombings and torture and mass murder and annihilation of entire communities, or we are going to victimize you by torturing you, annihilating your community. So those are your choices, folks. So long as you endure Islam, the world has two choices, to be abused by Islam or to become an Islamic abuser. Those are your choices.
I want to play this last clip, and then I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
All right.
Then we ask what he thinks of ISIS, and his response stuns the entire room. They are right, he says.
All right. So after all of this stuff he goes through,
mm-hmm.
he says they're right.
Mm-hmm.
They're right. Now, my question to you is this. Why do you think they let him go? They can do no more. They let him go, and now he goes
I think for a combination of reasons. One is that they were certain that he was not going to fight against them. They were relatively certain that they would be able to recall him and use him to fight on their behalf as necessary. I think they were aware that he would be engaged in an interview, not unlike the one we just heard, further helping their cause. The CNN, I'm sure, thinks, wow, this did great damage to the cause because it shows just how murderous Islamic State is. But no,